The Michigan Supreme Court begins hearing arguments today involving two disputed laws passed during the first term of Governor Rick Snyder. First, justices will consider whether the state's recent right-to-work law, which eliminated the payment of union dues as a condition of employment, also applies to unionized state employees. Second, it will explore whether the state exceeded its authority back in 2011, when Michigan pensioners became subject to a 4% contribution from their pay in order to keep full benefits. To revisit the details of these cases, along with what the justices will likely be considering, Current State welcomes back Professor Devin Schindler, constitutional law expert on the faculty of Western Michigan University Cooley Law School. We also welcome back Dr. John Beck, associate professor in the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations here at Michigan State University. Devin, John Beck, welcome back. John Beck, we'll start with you. Let's review the basics of the right-to-work case. Governor Snyder, of course, signed right-to-work into law 2 years ago after a very contentious debate and sometimes violent protest. Remind our listeners what's happened between then and now.
Well, just to make sure that we're all on the same page, right-to-work comes out of federal law. There's a state-by-state decision that can be made under Section 14B of Taft-Hartley, which allows states to decide whether or not they want to make a what is now called a right-to-work kind of law for their specific state. It's one of the few kind of state-by-state carve-outs in labor law of this sort. When the state legislature passed right to work, it was passed on the notion that it would be a boon to economic development. And I believe that the political undertone for that passage had to do with the fact the strength of public sector unions. Public sector unions are some of the strongest, members in relation to the overall labor movement. So in that way, when it was passed in December of 2012, I think that there was both on the one side great hope, maybe in the Republican camp, that there would be some kind of boon to overall economic development. And on the other side, I think there was a fear that there would be a plummet in labor union membership here in the state of Michigan. I don't believe either has necessarily come to pass as a result of right to work. The specific Supreme Court case turns on a very, very particular notion. That is that state workers are covered by the Civil Service Commission and that the actual passage of right to work goes against the state constitution, which gives sole authority to the Public Service Commission for the purpose of actually handling public sector labor law.
Let's bring Professor Schindler in here on this and take that point a little bit deeper. Professor Schindler, the state employees' unions then, are they arguing in this case that it is the Civil Service Commission that has precedence? Is that really what this case turns on?
Yes, essentially that is correct. This is a legal issue that only a law professor could love because at first glance there would appear to be a certain inconsistency in the Michigan Constitution. Not to bore the listeners, but essentially Article 11, Section 5 of the Michigan Constitution vests with the CSC exclusive authority to regulate all conditions of employment. The unions are arguing, in essence, that this particular language at first glance gives them plenary authority, absolute authority to set the conditions of employment, including but not limited to the condition of whether or not you have to pay union dues. The supporters of the law, however, point to Section 4, Article 4 of the Constitution, Section 49, which, generally speaking, gives the legislature the authority to pass laws relative to the hours and conditions of employment. So I have one provision of the Constitution would suggest that the CSC, Civil Service Commission, has plenary authority to regulate the conditions of employment, but I have another section of the Constitution which suggests that the legislature has the right to pass laws relative to the conditions of employment.
Okay.
So I have an internal conflict here, what would appear to be an internal conflict in the Constitution.
Our current state guest, Professor Devin Schindler, constitutional law expert on the faculty of Western Michigan University Cooley Law School, and Dr. John Beck of the Michigan State University School of Human Resources and Labor Relations. John Beck, talk to us a little bit more about the responsibilities of the Civil Service Commission. How much authority does it have over the conditions of employment for state workers?
Well, and I would defer to my colleague. I'm not really an expert on civil service kind of considerations. Much of my work has to do much more with labor union structure and history and other things along that
okay.
line.
Devin, can you help us out on that front?
Certainly. There's a number of statutes, including and constitutional language, that essentially says under the Constitution that the Civil Service Commission can classify all positions, can set respective duties and responsibility, fix the rates of compensation, improve or approve or disapprove of disbursements, set up examinations and merits payment structures. Essentially, when you get into the details, who gets promoted, how much they get paid, grievances, things of that nature, the Civil Service Commission under the Constitution is vested with a great deal of authority to really set the sort of the I hate to say nitpicky, but the specific provisions of how much you get paid, how you get paid, how you get promoted, and things of that nature. And so the Constitution does give the Civil Service Commission pretty broad authority in a number of areas.
Okay. John Beck, let me ask you, how have Michigan's right-to-work laws changed the culture of labor relations in the state? Are we far enough into this period that we can see impact so far?
No, I think that it's still early for a number of reasons. First, right when the law was passed, there was an open period when a lot of contracts got renegotiated before the law took effect. And if people were under an existing contract, then those same kind of dues considerations stayed until the actual end of the contract period. So many contracts will not run out until this year or next year that for the first time will then allow people not to be union members and still get the same benefits of a union contract, free riders, as they're often called by the labor movement. This specific case is interesting from the point of view that the argument about this case is really very, very particular and close, and it's not about whether or not anyone really either likes or dislikes right to work. It's about the application of the law in relation to civil service, as our law professor has pointed out. I think that an interesting parallel is that Indiana just upheld their right-to-work law on a different constitutional challenge that had to do with kind of a what might be called a taking. That is, that could the state compel someone to do something without compensation? Could they compel a union to, for example, continue to give benefits to non-members without compensation? That was just recently the state was upheld in its right to work challenge unanimously by the Indiana State Court. Mm. So we've got two different, very, very different cases in terms of what's being argued. There's no question that people who are on one side or the other of liking or not liking right to work are finding different ways to try to challenge or uphold the law.
Interesting. Professor Schindler.
If I may, Professor Beck makes an excellent point that at the end of the day, the argument in front of the Supreme Court isn't or at least shouldn't be a policy argument. Whether you like these laws, whether you don't like these laws is really not the issue. Ultimately, the issue is who gets to decide, the legislature or the CSC?
Professor Schindler, let's quickly move on to the pension case. What key arguments are in play here?
Well, the pension case is obviously a very interesting case, and it has to do with parts of the Constitution that limit the ability to restrict pensions. And, of course, we've got some issues with expenses and what we can afford and what we can't afford. And so it's a bit of a similar issue on exactly what is the interrelationship between the constitutional provisions and the protections our Constitution gives the pension workers and the legislature's ability, as well as all of government's ability, to interfere with those particular requirements.
John, public sector unions tend to be pretty powerful organizers. What are the political consequences of these decisions?
Well, the here in the state of Michigan, not unlike elsewhere, public sector unionization is at a higher rate than private sector unionization. So public sector unions are kind of the bulwark of a continuing labor movement by comparison. So nationwide, the public sector is a little over 35% organized. The private sector is just a little over 6% organized, for an overall unionization rate nationally of about 11%. But public sector unions are extremely important politically. They've been a large group through political action committees of support for Democratic candidates or friendly Republican candidates. And they are one of the few large money kind of groups that's in opposition to the Koch brothers and others in relation to political spending. So in that fashion, trying to keep them busy with signing up members rather than turning their attention to other matters, the kind of the day-to-day internal organizing responsibilities in right-to-work states, that, I think, is really the overall political subtext that was part of this.
We want to thank our guest. Dr. John Beck is Associate Professor in the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations here at Michigan State. Professor Devin Schindler joins us on the line as well. He is a constitutional law expert on the faculty of Western Michigan University Cooley Law School. Dr. Beck, Dr. Schindler, many thanks.
Pleasure is mine.
Thank you.